Welcome to Harmless Observations, episode one.
So when we did when we recorded last Friday, I decided that it would be episode zero because we would just do like introductions and like briefly talk about things to give you a taste of what it would be like, and we wouldn't really have a full episode. And we had a full episode, so now I just look kind of dumb.
Yeah, we should have been like episode 0.5 or something.
Yeah. Or just episode one.
Episode one. So here we are at episode two.
Here's episode one.
It's episode one.
Welcome to Harmless Observations.
I'm Caleb Engineering.
And I am Mitchell Atencio, and you probably know that already. But welcome. If you don't, we are we're friends, and we record a podcast together. Go back to episode zero if you want our introductions, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess the format for this show is we just kind of think up ideas and then we talk about them.
We share them with each other.
So let's just jump right into it. This week I was thinking a lot about comedy and satire because the Babylon Bee ran an article where they were like, I want to take away your First Amendment rights. I want to take away your Second Amendment rights. Wait, why are you attacking me? I'm only a high schooler. And like they were making fun of David Hogg and like, is it David Hogg?
I don't know who that is.
I'm trying to remember if that was the satire name or if that was the actual name of that kid in Florida. So the Parkland kids, right? The Parkland school survivors. Yeah, David Hogg. So the Parkland shooting happened, and all these kids have been very, very, very active on social media and on different platforms and organizing marches and all that. And I'm not making any judgments one way or the other about what they're doing. So if that sounds condescending, it's not. If it sounds praiseworthy, it's not. But anyway, the Babylon Bee was satirizing him because he's gotten a lot of criticism from the right. A lot of criticism like that I wouldn't necessarily call warranted. Like they're just kind of attacking really dumb things rather than being like, hey, that's a really not good idea. And so they got criticized for that satire. They're like, why are you going after high school kids? That seems kind of out of bounds. And I've never really held the opinion that anything is out of bounds in comedy.
Change your mind on it?
Yeah, well, it's making me think that maybe kids should be off limits. And I've thought that to some extent with like president's kids. Like I've always been like, can we just keep president's kids out of this conversation?
This is where my sort of libertarian ideas come into play, I think, with this. Because I don't think that we should really dictate how anybody speaks about anybody, and if comedy is really just speaking something in a humorous way, there's really no limitation to what can be said. I do think there are limitations to subjective experiences of humor.
I certainly don't want actual limitations. I'm just saying, like, if we were comedians, or if you were to advise a comedian, like, jokes not to make, would you make them?
So I'd like probably push morally, them over the edge to make them, which is not a good thing to say, but I think we were actually talking about this just half an hour ago or so, where I was saying that I have really no fear of what people say about my statements, and it leads to a lot of trouble for me, because I'll say things and be so fascinated in the response that I
felt like national like tragedy should be off limits to an extent. So like, But I differentiate between funny and appropriate.
Okay, well, have you seen...
Let me explain the difference, because I think a lot of people like don't get the difference between funny and appropriate. Like, they'll see something that's a Holocaust joke, and they'll be like, that's not funny. Well, yes, it is. It's a funny joke. It doesn't mean it's an appropriate joke. And you can say that's not an appropriate joke and still say that's also a funny joke.
Inappropriate jokes can still be funny. In fact, they often are.
Yeah, no, but even like that joke should not have been made. It can still be a funny joke. And then, like, I think appropriateness changes from person to person. So, like, national tragedies probably shouldn't be made fun of, is what I was saying. But, like, I'm totally cool with Pete Davidson making 9/11 jokes.
I was about to bring that up. That's where I was going, yeah.
Because Pete Davidson's, for those of you who don't know, his dad was a firefighter who died in 9/11.
And Pete Davidson's an SNL cast member.
Yeah, and he's a stand-up comedian, and he makes a lot of jokes about it. The most memorable one that comes to mind is he was at the roast of Justin Bieber, and Snoop Dogg and Kevin Hart were also there, and he was like, Snoop Dogg and Kevin Hart are here! Snoop Dogg and Kevin Hart were in a movie together called Soul Plane. Soul Plane was my worst experience involving planes in my entire life. And, like, the audience is kind of like, oh, that's a weird joke. And he's like, and now for a flawless segue, my dad died in 9/11. And everyone, like, sits there kind of quietly, like, oh, I get... And then everyone's like, oh, I get the Soul Plane joke now. That's really funny. And then everyone's like, wait, are we allowed to laugh at that?
I don't remember it being in that order, but it is very funny.
It might have been a different order, but either way.
One stuck with me always because it made me realize the extent of joking about tragedy.
Exactly. And I would say to even some extent, like, I felt that way myself, although this was not a tragedy per se. It was a bad thing that happened when I crashed my Camry. I fell asleep at the wheel and crashed my Camry, and I was making jokes the next day, and to me that was like a really therapeutic way to cope, kind of like I was able to express my feelings in a funny format that like people weren't like I was like, able to express my frustrations without people being like, it's okay, Mitchell, bad things happen. Like I was able to just be like, hey, look, I have something in common with Kanye West now, we both crashed into poles, and everyone was like, ha ha ha. Yeah, but
you're the wire.
But my mom got really mad when I did that. She was like, you can't do that, you can't make jokes. And I was like, I'm the one who crashed a car, and her response was, it was our car. So I stopped making jokes around her.
So basically just don't make those jokes around your mom if your mom's gonna be upset.
Don't make jokes around your mom. Yeah,
that's a litmus test. Would you make this joke around your
mom? That means a lot of humor is off limits.
I'd probably make any joke around my mom.
I think I've found out where the... Well, actually, no. I'm looking at this mic. We're recording with a new mic this week, and we're going to have the audio levels right this time, because last episode, and a lot of you told us this, the audio levels were not correct.
Yep.
But I think if you look on this side, see this little, like, thing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means. This one's clearly for the headphones, but we're going to test this. I'm gonna turn this down. If you can't hear us, you'll know why. I'm gonna test this real quick. So I'm gonna turn this down, but then I'm gonna turn this up. And are we gonna get more sensitive audio?
Nope, not gonna happen.
It didn't. I don't think it did anything. I'm putting it back to the level it was. All right, we're back at the level that I think we should be. Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Yes.
So satire, comedy. No, nothing really should be off limits. I just think maybe for the sake of, like, your reputation as a comedian or a satirical website, like, I don't see The Onion going after high school kids all that often.
No, I think...
Like, there seems to be this, like, if you're not a legal adult, like, if you can't, you know, be drafted into
sort
the
of
army...
The defenseless position.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you make fun of Hillary Clinton, and, like, there's firepower to come back. You make fun of a high school kid... But the argument, like, to be fair, like, these kids have just as much sway at this point. So I think the bigger argument is, like, these kids went through a tragedy, and yes, like, let's not criticize, this can be maybe a segue, but, like, there's this idea that, like, these kids went through a tragedy, so, and to varying degrees from more progressive circles, there's, like, don't criticize them at all, they went through a tragedy, let's talk about the merit of their ideas after the fact, and then there's, like, don't attack the fact that you think their haircut is stupid, which I think everyone should
agree
on.
Yeah, let's attack on character, which is just fundamentally denies what logic and rational debate
is. But I think I've seen people who are even okay with, like, not, like, harsh attacks on ideas right now, because they're, like, they're kids, they went through a tragedy, like, they're still high school kids.
I think that the collective experience of grief that we experience as humans is something that goes beyond my own ability or will to criticize it in a way that's... But, like, I still do. So I'm humbled and maybe even humiliated when I have to criticize people who are speaking from an experience that I don't have.
Yeah.
But I think it is something that... I think by speaking about a tragedy in the way... that is genuine, we may be able to help in creating a better idea.
Yeah, I think my hesitancy is, like, I think there's a long history of people discounting others' experiences, which then lead to valid logical conclusions, because to them they're not logical conclusions. You know what I mean? Like, the Ben Shapiros who, like, criticize any Black Lives Matter movements, and they're like, this doesn't stand with reason. And it's like, well, that's because you're an affluent, like, white person, Ben, like, you haven't been in these situations, you honestly can't speak to what this is. And it's like, well, the numbers don't add up. And it's like, okay, well, the numbers are skewed in whatever way you want to skew them, you know, because
yeah, there's more than just numbers.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm a qualitative research person myself when it comes to this kind of situation. I think it's much more about the human experience than it is about the human statistic.
Yeah, and so I'm like hesitant to say like all ideas should only be judged off their merit, because then I think people will discount people who speak from experience as like a culture or as a community. We're getting dangerously close to talking about Jordan Peterson, which I don't want to do.
Don't want to talk about Jordan Peterson?
Don't want to talk about Jordan Peterson.
Do you want to talk with Jordan Peterson ever? I think he might be an interesting person to have a conversation with.
I would love to have a conversation with him, but like, here would be my requirement.
Yes?
There could be no Ingenieries or Castiles there. if I got the opportunity, like if, let's say Josiah comes to me and he's like, I'm going to get to have dinner with Jordan Peterson. Do you want to come? I'd be like, no. Like, straight up, like, no thank you. Because, like, I would want to just sit with him and talk with him and, like, discuss ideas with him without any other people, like, jumping in to defend me or him. And this just speaks to another, like, problem I have. And as the oldest sibling, you will understand this. When you're, like, trying to make a case for something and someone else who's not as smart or not as wise or, like, slightly disagrees with you tries to agree and you're like, whoa, that is not the argument I'm making. So
I'm saying something else entirely.
So, like, little siblings, when you, like, go to your parents and you're like, hey, we haven't had dessert for, like, the last week. I would love to have some ice cream tonight. And your parents are like, I don't know, you know, like sugar. And you're like, okay, so let me make my case. Like I said, we haven't had dessert in the last week and we're, you know, our ice cream is like, we have plenty. Everybody could have some. And then like your sister jumps in and she's like, yeah. And we only watched 2 hours of TV today. And you're like, okay, first off, not only does that not have anything to do with what we're talking about. Second off, that's a lot in adult hours. So, like, that doesn't look good.
Yeah, you're making your case worse.
And I'm not saying that's necessarily what would happen for Jordan Peterson or for myself. But I just know that if I were to have that discussion with you or with anyone else.
I think it's a too many cooks situation.
That's exactly what it is.
Too many cooks in the kitchen with Jordan Peterson. Makes for some burnt lobster.
Now, if Josiah was like, I had to sit down with Jordan Peterson, do you want to watch it? I'm like, yes, heck yes. I would love to see that. I just don't want to be there trying to have a conversation with him with, like, really anyone else around.
I wouldn't mind. I think it would be entertaining because I could do my anthropologist thing.
Okay, so if you're around and you just sit and, like, every now and then throw in, like, a statistic that's like, this would be really interesting to ponder, like you often do, you know, that might be okay.
Think about this.
But I think my biggest fear is that, like, if I ever got to interview or talk to Jordan Peterson, I would, like, come with, like, substance and questions and criticisms. And, like, somehow, like, someone else around would end up spinning it, and I would get, like, off track, and I would end up like that BBC interviewer who was like, oh, you're saying lobsters are better than humans? Or whatever, like, dumb thing she said. And I just don't want that to happen. Yes. I want to have a substantial, like, serious conversation with Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, there's no denying that Jordan Peterson's very intelligent. And I think a good conversation with him would be... Yeah, in his field. And I think he transcends into some other fields because he has such a great books education.
We started talking about Jordan Peterson. On to our next topic for the evening.
Yeah, who else would you... want to interview.
No, that's not a bad segue, though, and I'm going to let you start. Okay, so my question, this is, like, super generic, like, get-to-know-a-person question.
Yes.
But it's of, like, living people now, who would you want to sit down and have a conversation with? And you can, like, that can be an interview, or that can just be, like, sit down and talk.
This is, like, a really cheap answer, but it's been my answer for years. It's Bob Dylan. It's always been Bob Dylan. And there's a lot of reasons why it'll always be Bob Dylan.
It's always
as long as Bob Dylan's around. Because Bob Dylan is an artist and a writer before he's anything else. And I think that amount of expressiveness that he brings to the world is something I admire and I'd like to learn from, or at least see how he's experienced it. Because what I've noticed is there are lots of artists like this, but he's a very great example of not limiting oneself to a specific genre or specific art medium. And, like, he paints and he writes poetry and children's books and music, obviously. And that's exactly what I really like about him.
on Monday at State Press, I said I thought the Stones were overrated, the Rolling Stones were overrated, and I got fired, quote-unquote, for that. Like, we have this joke running at State Press where we're like, that's it, you're fired, and so I got fired, and so I tweeted about it. I was like, got fired for saying the Stones were overrated, and so then one of my coworkers at Cronkite News, who's a huge Stones fan, was like, did you really get fired? I was like, no, I just...
Why do you think
they're overrated? And I was like, I just don't find them interesting. Like, they're just like an average rock band to me. And Mick Jagger's voice, it, like, doesn't compel me to listen to more than an album or so. And she's just like, oh, she's like, what do you think about the Beatles? And I was like, I think the Beatles are great. Like, love the Beatles, especially late Beatles, especially like solo stuff from the Beatle artists. Like, love it.
And I just, yeah.
So I promise it's going to come back around. She's like, what do you think about Bob Dylan? And she's like, I won't be offended. And I was like, I don't enjoy Bob Dylan at all. I think he's a poor man's Paul Simon. I don't think he's good at all. And then like another coworker overheard that, and the two of them were like, they're nothing alike. Their music isn't similar at all. And I'm just like, oh, okay.
Music's a subjective experience. Yeah. So, I mean, I like the Stones. I think they're perfectly rated, as we've said many times now.
Yeah.
I think if you don't like Mick Jagger's voice, you're missing out.
No, I don't, like, dislike Mick Jagger's voice, but, like, I listen to Mick Jagger, and I'm just kind of like, cool, you've shown me everything you can do in one album. And I listen to Freddie Mercury, and I'm like, dang, what more can you do?
Hmm.
Who else would you want to sit down with?
Who else would I want to sit down with? Hmm. Right now... all the people that come to mind are dead, but I'm going to say it anyways. I'd really like to sit down with Claude Levi Strauss. He's a structural anthropologist, and I think he had a lot of philosophy background too, but he had some interesting perspectives on mythology and culture. And as someone who's been really fascinated with mythology my whole life, and also has read a lot of his work, I think that he would probably challenge my ideas about mythology, even if he were wrong. And that's something that I look for in good conversations.
You keep buzzing, like, these little dumb things that happened to me this week that I think are worth talking about. earlier this week, I wrote a story about this thing called March Mammal Madness, and I'm not going to go into it too much. Aw, that's so sweet. You have my photo as your phone background.
I do.
Okay, anyway. March Mammal Madness, and like a few years ago they had mythical creatures like a unicorn and a yeti and stuff, and so I like my mom read the story and she was like, you think the yeti is mythical now? Because I'm like a big believer that a lot of these like cryptids are, I just think that we're really stupid to assume that we know everything we know and that like we can actually map out everything. So like I do like I'm much more likely to rely on like an entire like nation of peoples who say like, yeah, the megalodon shark is still around, we see it all the time, than like these people who come and then they search for like 2 hours with fancy cameras and sonar and they're like, it's not here, they're like, it's not here, these people are crazy, you know. And like I don't apply that to like Bigfoot, like there's tons of them in the US, or even like the Yeti as some, or the Loch Ness, but I do believe that like there are creatures out there that like we think are gone or don't really exist that totally do.
I think you're right to some extent, but I think a lot of it is also, and you wouldn't disagree with this, is a lot of people having experiences and chalking it up to mythology.
Yeah. I think that's fair too.
It doesn't make it any less powerful in my opinion.
Yeah,
this
is going to sound like almost the opposite of ethnocentric, but well, it's going to sound ethnocentric, just not toward America. I'm more inclined to believe like tribal nations and island nation stories of mythical creatures than I am American ones, because like American ones, it always seems to me like you just have this random dude who was hiking in Montana.
Oh, so you mean like modern American?
Yeah, totally modern. Like this random dude hiking in Montana saw a tree fall, and then he was like, "I saw Bigfoot." Like that, way less believable to me than like you go out to some of these like the American Pacific Islands, and they're like, "No, like we definitely have giant creatures that light up and fly, like bioluminescent pterodactyls, essentially." And I'm far more likely to believe that than I am a dude who says he saw Bigfoot.
Wow, you have so much faith, Mitchell. Give me your faith
in mythical creatures.
Yes, because my skeptical brain is just going, ah, nope, nope, not happening.
Give me one more person that you'd want to talk to.
One more person that I want to talk to besides you.
Oh, so bad.
Oh, man. I'd really like to talk to Rob Bell. I feel like it would be a great thing for my life. But we're not going to go into that. I'm going to name somebody else. I'm definitely going to name somebody else. What modern author? I'm going to go with the author this time. Why do they have to be living people?
Dead people opens up the range too much.
Allen Ginsberg, he didn't die that far ago.
I mean, if you go with living people, you have like 7.8 billion people to choose from.
That's true.
If you go with dead people, you have a significantly higher number.
You know what the problem is I don't pay that much attention to living people. Which is a problem, because I'm an anthropology student.
No, I mean, that's...
I need to pay more attention to living people, Mitchell. I'm grateful for you.
Just, okay, so explain to me, like, why you would want to talk to,
Allen Ginsberg?
Yeah, Allen Ginsberg.
Allen Ginsberg is my favorite poet, that's why. But I think what he did with, Howl and other poems in general is he made poetry, he reframed poetry in a way so publicly that has been inspirational to me. And I maybe would just, like, want to talk about his actual methods of writing poetry.
This is going to be so telling, like, between the anthropology difference and journalism difference between the two of us, because you went with, like, two dead people and, like, a living legend and, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're going with people who are, like, you want to know about, like, their livelihoods and, like, you want to look at these interesting issues. And the people I'm going to give you, I want to talk to because, like, they cause a lot of controversy or, like, they've been very, like, influential in the areas they were, and like I want to pick their brains and like get to know.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I don't think I'm defining the difference well, but I think it'll make sense if people know who I'm talking about after the fact. So I was thinking of like who I would want to talk to. The first person that came to mind was a lady named Catafent. I know her first name.
I know the name. Yeah. It's so familiar.
Her first name's actually Catalina. I do not know her last name. She founded what was called Young Lady at the time, which was a basically like curated advocate for females in hip hop and in Christian hip hop specifically. She's probably one of the most influential people, women for sure, in Christian hip hop in the last 10-15 years. She's been very outspoken about the fact that like sexism exists in that culture almost as much as it does, if not just as much as it does in hip-hop culture. She's been a musical artist, and she now does like a lot of paintings and earrings and art. But she speaks very like brashly and confidently, which is something I think that Christian hip-hop and Christianity needs, is for women to be empowered to speak like that. But anyway, she's somebody who gets like a ton of hate, and I think that the people who follow her and like the cultures around her have turned her into like a much bigger villain and like character than she actually is. And I would love to just sit down and like get to know her on a one-on-one.
That'd be interesting.
Heart. She's married to Words Played, who's a rapper.
Oh, okay, yeah. I know who that is.
So, that's actually one of the problems. I'm glad I did not start with that because a lot of people will start with, oh, she's married to this rapper, and it's like they've been married for like less than a year, and she's been an influential figure in Christian hip hop for like.
Yeah, 10. I feel like the marriage thing sort of like ruins people's perception of people in a positive and good way. And bad way.
Yeah. I would want to sit down and talk, like, mics off. Like, I don't want to, like, just I like the idea of interviewing her, but, like, I would just want to sit down because, honestly, I would love to be able to say something and her to cut in and be like, that right there, that is the problem. And me to be like, what? And then, like, just to sit and listen. And because, like, I'm learning a lot about listening and humility and, like I've talked about a little bit before, like listening to voices that aren't my own. So people of color, people, you know, or women or other people who identify in different ways. because I'm learning a lot about doing that, like, I really feel like, I just feel like that'd be a beneficial conversation.
Yeah, that would be a good thing.
Next person on my list is Chadwick Gardner, who is the lead singer of King's Kaleidoscope.
I thought you were going to say Bozeman.
Well, that would be really cool, too. Maybe I could get the two of them together.
Chadwick interviews.
The Chadwick interviews.
The Chadwick tapes.
I just have like a whole series where I just interview famous Chadwicks. Chad Gardner, lead singer of King's Kaleidoscope. I watched an interview with him and the drummer of the band today, and they said that one of the names they almost went with for the band was Jambulance. And then the next one, which is my favorite, Pre-Destiny's Child. So, like, Predestination and Beyonce's band. Beyonce's band, that's going to piss off so many Destiny Child fans.
And Beyonce's band.
No, so I'd want to sit with Chad because he's like, totally spurned the Christian music industry just to make, like, genuine art. And I really appreciate that. And he's probably lost a lot of money doing so. And I really appreciate, like, that commitment to authenticity. There was one other person who I immediately had off the top of my head.
Is it Papa?
No.
Papa Francis?
No, we'll talk about the Pope later.
Papa Francis, the Pope.
No, that would be great. Yeah, I mean, he can definitely go on the list.
Or Richard Roy.
No. I wouldn't enjoy that very much.
Oh, I'd love it. So the Pope.
Yeah, that's probably a good time to segue. If I can think of the other person.
Yeah, let us know if you think about it.
It was,
the Pope did some crazy
stuff. Well, okay, so, like, Ray Neutron's maybe always on the list. Like, but I guess, you know what I mean? This point, anytime he comes up in the conversation of, like, who would you most want to, and it's like a communal thing, like, who would you most want to sit and have dinner with? Who do you most want to talk to? Who do you most want to photograph? Who do you most want to interview? Who do you most want to, like, collaborate with? Like, he's on the top five list right now, and he will be until I do.
I'm really happy to interview anybody, I think I've just realized.
Yeah, that's fair. Would you interview Sheriff Joe Arpaio?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gladly. I'd drive all the way to the West Valley to interview Sheriff Joe Arpaio. That's how much I'd want to do it.
Wow. I would whistle, but I don't know what that would do to, like, the mic and the audio.
The Pope. Allegedly, the Pope said
the Pope
hell is not real.
Yeah, okay. So, and we gotta...
He's not the first person to say it.
He might be the first Pope to say it.
He might be.
I gotta pull...
I bet Peter said hell didn't exist at some point.
Not for long, I don't think. I gotta find the actual, like, story. Because
there was an update recently on Twitter.
I don't want to misquote this last night.
The Vatican denied
that. No, Pope said, see, that that's the thing. Is okay. So Pope Francis sat down with this, like, 92 or 96. I'll know in a second when my browser loads. He sat down with a friend of his. His name is Eugenio Scalfari. I'm probably butchering that name pronunciation. This guy's like a 92-year-old atheist who's friends with the Pope. And so it was written in Italian and translated to English. And the headline is called "The Pope: It is an honor to be called a revolutionary." And so, like, he talks to the Pope, this guy, and he's like, "Oh, what happens to bad souls? Are they punished?" And he says, the Pope said, quote, "They are not punished. Those who repent obtain the forgiveness of God and enter the rank of souls who contemplate him. But those who do not repent and cannot therefore be forgiven disappear. There is no hell. There is the disappearance of sinful souls." And that is... That's a lot.
That's a lot for this culture to process.
Yeah, so that's the thing.
I think... I don't mind that he said it.
Non-American cultures, non-Western Christianity, I'll amend, doesn't get too bothered by this idea because, like, you could make strong arguments for that with the text, and you can make strong arguments that that basically, like, is what hell is being separated from God. And yeah, if your soul's not with God, that's hell. And... My usual reaction, I've said this on Twitter a lot, is my usual reaction to Pope said something crazy news is got lost in translation and or culture. In this case, it seems to be something a little different, which is this Scalfari guy is super old, like I said, and he does not record or write down anything from his interviews. He just goes off memory.
Memory, really?
Yeah. That's a great way to interview people. Not a good journalistic habit. So the Vatican released a statement. They said, the Holy Father Francis recently received the founder of the newspaper in a private meeting, blah, 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 blah. I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. Without, however, giving him any interviews. This is the important part. What is reported by the author in today's article is the result of his reconstruction in which the textual words were pronounced by the Pope are not quoted. No quotation of the aforementioned article must therefore be considered a faithful transcription of the words of the Holy Father. Here's what struck me about this statement from the Vatican. What they said was, this shouldn't be considered accurate because the words aren't exactly a transcript.
But he likely said something along those lines.
Yeah, so, like, if the Pope, like, actively believed in hell, you'd think they would also just be like,
by the way, the Pope doesn't believe in hell.
The Pope believes in hell, just so you know. The Pope believes in hell,
for the record. But
oh, wait. NPR update, 34 seconds ago, and the headline says, Pope Francis is making it very clear that, despite what you may have heard, he believes that hell exists. We're going to open this article up right now. Breaking news on harmless observations.
Breaking news.
From NPR.
Pope.
Things got a... This is a great lead.
Can I read
things got a little heated at the Vatican this week. 93-year-old avowed atheist reporter. Sorry. So let's see.
I think that's, it's interesting that an atheist reporter transcribed that quote. Not that, like, as a journalist, you transcribe what you transcribe, but that sort of helps the Christian cause, I feel, in this time and age.
That it was an atheist who did it?
Not particular that it was an atheist that did it, but that this particular thing is coming out. Because, at least for me, it's, in my experience, believing something along what the Pope said in that quote makes Christianity an easier pill to swallow. What do you think? What is it saying?
It doesn't add anything. This is really funny, though. So it ends with, Easter, the day Christians celebrate Jesus' resurrection, is on Sunday. And there's a correction. It says, an earlier version of this post incorrectly described Easter as, quote, the day celebrating the idea that Jesus did not die and go to hell or purgatory or anywhere at all, but rather arose into heaven. And, yeah, clearly...
NPR
that,
people...
That published, and then someone read it and was like, No. Which reminds me of the correction I sent you earlier this week. Do you want to tell the people about?
I don't remember.
Netanyahu. And
no, I don't
yeah,
remember.
I'll let you read it then. This was from the Wall Street Journal.
An earlier version of this article incorrectly stated that Benjamin Netanyahu said Moses brought water from Iraq. He said the water was brought from a rock.
Yeah, so Iraq, the country, versus Iraq, as in the biblical story of Moses smacking that rock and getting some water from it.
Well, that's a great example right there. I think a lot of things are lost in culture and translation.
Yeah, we're about... Oh, this is a good segue to my next topic, which was cultural nuances that are lost in translation. And specifically, one of the things that has been, like, a mission, so to speak, of modern American Christianity has been to, like, update our English translations to say sons and daughters of God, or to say
children of God. Them of God.
They're bothered by it saying sons of God. Because they're like, this was just the culture at the time.
Yeah. It's inaccurate. It's inaccurate.
We want it to be accurate to our culture and time. That's not really correct. And here's why. And I first learned this from
I'm interested to hear this.
I first learned this from my fiance, who is a worship arts graduate from Grand Canyon University. And obviously, maybe not obviously, I guess, but my fiance is a woman. Anyway, obvious to most, if not all, of our listeners. And she was explaining to me, and I've done some reading on this, so I know that she's not just making it up or anything, which she... Anyway.
She wouldn't do
yeah,
such a thing.
Yeah, thanks for saying that.
She wouldn't dare to make something up.
And this is kind of just an explanation of what it could mean, that I believe is correct in what I've, you know, read and contemplated. When Jesus says, like, I'm here to make you, like, sons of God, or, like, you're, like, you know, you're the sons of the Father, it was not a statement to males that they were going to become like Jesus. It was a statement to people that they were going to be elevated to the status of the sons of God. So, like, in their culture, like, sons obviously held a much higher importance than daughters. Like,
yeah, what it means is that they were given a birthright, pretty much.
Exactly. And so what they were doing was, Jesus was saying, like, you're going to be elevated to this same status. So I'm not saying I have an issue with, like, changing translations, because honestly, I think it's good for our culture to read that and understand that Jesus and the New Testament writers are talking to both men and women.
Yeah, not everyone's going to go read the Koine or the Hebrew.
No, and I don't want that necessarily, but what we're doing is we're making it so that, like, we're losing that importance, and maybe that's fine. Our culture doesn't have that importance, but I would argue our culture, like, prioritizes males in many ways over females, and so
very true.
Yeah, so I think maybe it would be a good thing to talk about from churches that, like, Jesus came to elevate us all to this status that is much higher than any of the statuses we could create for ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's not the point of Christianity, though. The point of Christianity isn't status, and I think that I just want to make that clear that it's not.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I just think it'd be nice if we talked about that more, because I think it would go along great with what Jesus did come here to do, which was, like to comfort the oppressed and to heal, you know, the sick and to feed the poor and to serve people and love people, right? And not having this conversation about, yeah, and Jesus came to make it so that, like, we didn't have this, like, vast gender imbalance in culture.
Yes, Jesus came to create gender imbalances is, like, the theology that has been preached is what I've perceived.
Yeah, absolutely. Was just a little thing I wanted to talk about, which was this idea that, like, rather than just going, like, this isn't a correct translation anymore, I still think, like I'm saying, I think it would be very good to update translations to say sons and daughters, or children.
Yeah, well, the apostles and Paul wrote in a different time, and the Bible is imbued with their own cultural biases as well as the truth that is embedded within that. So I think...
But even if it wasn't a cultural bias that they were ignoring women, which is still a possibility, even if it was that they were actually telling women they were elevated to the status of son... I still think it's good to change the translation.
Yeah, either way, it's a good idea. But I think it's a good idea to do it aware of what you're actually
implicating. We're coming toward the end of our podcast, which is weird.
Yeah, it is.
Because we're not trying to do an hour for everything. I want to hear one of your questions, if you have anything else. Or we can just
pull from the list. What is the art projects you're working on next, Mitchell?
Good question.
I'll talk about mine too.
But I don't totally know what art projects I'm working on next. Right now I'm just taking a lot of photos and enjoying that, especially on film. I've been doing film photography for a while now, but I kind of recognize that that, like, might be the medium I want to chase and prioritize.
Yes.
Obviously, that's there will be times medium where I have to shoot. I don't feel like I have a distinct style as a photographer. Well, as a photographer, yes, but not as a, like, photo editor. So, like, you can look at people's photos and be like, ah, there's a golden rose tint to this.
Yes,
like,
they that use is that someone's filter photo or whatnot.
Yeah, I just don't do that. I can't that. And I don't, maybe that's my style and people would recognize that if, like, I were a prominent photographer. But I think maybe my style will come from shooting on film. And just taking better photos than everyone else.
That's very competitive of you to say.
Yeah, maybe not. So what I want to do next is I want to work on a book trilogy. And it would be much shorter books than my first photography book. But I want to plan out from 1 to 3 a trilogy of concepts that all tie together but are separate and distinct that I can turn into short photo books, photo magazines, whatever you want to call it. And like release and work on periodically. Like, it wouldn't be 3 things at once. Like, think of it like, you know, the way Marvel's planned out their cinematic universe.
Ah, yes.
But with only three, not
so
400.
Three photo book. You're going to do a Lord of the Rings of photo books.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those were all kind of released in one.
Oh, you're talking about the movies, but the books.
Yeah, it'd be more like the movies, not the books, because the books were like one big.
Okay.
There were three books, you know, but like they weren't like. Am I right? Did Tolkien release those like years apart? I thought
I'm
they
not
all
a Tolkien
at,
scholar. Yeah, I'm going to make somebody angry if I speak about that.
I'm already making people angry.
yeah.
Sorry, Tolkien people.
Yeah, we love you.
C.S. Lewis people, you're our guys.
Yeah, you're our guys. We love
and girls.
I love C.S. Lewis.
Unless we're elevating you to the status of
yeah.
God.
Yeah, you know what? We should just use only masculine pronouns from
now
on out.
Actually, that's a pretty good like cultural example of this, is like in Arizona, we say you guys, right? And we mean
yeah, we mean everybody.
But if you went to the South and you said you guys, you would have to like clarify,
like,
I'm talking
you,
to everyone.
You people, yes.
Yeah, and so like if Jesus were to have gone to Mississippi and to have been from Arizona, he would have been like, you are all guys. And not meant you're all men. You're all elevated to the stat. Anyway.
You are all elevated to the status of men. Literally. Because that's like their idea. I don't know.
We should delete that portion from this podcast, but we won't.
Yeah, we won't.
We will.
Either we will. Perhaps we will. We will. I've been making some art.
Yeah, tell me about your art.
I've been making a lot of poetry, and I think poetry is a medium that I'm settling into fairly well. And it's been a constant daily experience now. And that's nice, because like for a while I felt mediumless, but now I can like confidently say that I'm a poetry artist. I don't know. Maybe I'm not that confident. I don't feel very confident. But yeah, poetry.
Are you going to try and turn that into anything beyond just like continually writing poems? Are you going to ever release them for the people?
Yes, actually. There's something really special coming up.
Oh, I haven't even heard about this. We'll have to talk off the record.
Yes. I'm going to share it right now.
Oh, share it right now.
Oh,
never
yeah.
mind. Yeah, share
yeah,
it
everyone
out.
Should know. Carter Castile and I are working on a poetry and music project. And the project will comprise of him improvising on a Moog modulator, which is a keyboard and synthesizer that makes very unique sounds, while I read poetry. And we're going to go to different places, venues, and readings, and I'll share poetry while he makes music. And it's going to be a beautiful way to share poetry.
Where do you plan to do this? Like coffee shops? Or
coffee shops, art walks, just whatever location is the most fitting for the art.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so expect to hear about that stuff pretty soon, because it's in the works. So yeah, I have a medium to express poetry.
That's great.
Yeah, and I just finished a roll of film too, so.
Black and white?
Color.
Oh, very cool. We'll talk about Richard Dawkins next time.
Yeah, tune in next time to Harmless Observations.
Yeah, do you want to do thank yous? We should do thank yous at the end of every episode.
Oh, yes.
They can just be weekly thank yous, like, from your life or specifically podcast related.
Weekly thank you to Carter for being my artist in crime. Because Carter is a very good artist, and he inspires me to do well with art and encourages me to go further.
My thank you is all the people who gave me feedback, like, after this. Carter being one of them, but, like, a bunch of people messaged you and I or commented on posts where they were like, hey, dope podcast, really like it, thanks for making it, or other things like that. And that was pretty astounding to me. So,
yeah. Essentially everyone liked it besides
yeah.
like my brother.
Yeah,
so.
Well, that's fine. But he didn't listen to the whole thing, so.
Yeah, he listened to 5 minutes of it. Doesn't count.
We didn't even talk about anything in the first 5 minutes. Anyway, we have a podcast name now. We didn't have that last time.
Yeah.
And we have a logo, and we're on Apple Podcasts, and that's basically it, so.
Follow Mitchell on Twitter.
Follow me on Twitter. Follow, Caleb in real life.
Yeah, follow
but let
me.
But let him know first.
Just
don't
think about
him.
Me. Meditate don't. On my existence.
I was saying physically follow you. Just like let him know first. Like, don't
hey,
stalk
like
him.
I'm paying attention to you. Like,
hey, I'm watching you. Well, maybe that sounds bad.
I take it as a compliment.
Okay, that's it. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.